It's our hockey insider, Chris Johnston, who's back from covering the Cup Final. CJ, good morning. How's it going?
Can't believe you're making Cogs get up early and do your radio hit.
Well, 9:30.
He's 9:30. Not even sleeping.
Well, that's
buddy.
Exactly it. We're making him stay up late, Chris. That's what we're doing.
It's 7:30 in Denver, and I just can't imagine those guys have had much sleep.
No chance they've had any sleep.
Yes, I would
especially
imagine.
When you're sleeping next to Stanley.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when you're sleeping next to Stanley, you don't go to sleep. You just continue the party, and I'm sure Andrew Cogliano is doing just that. But here in Toronto, Chris, there was some news yesterday. Timothy Liljegren signing a 2-year deal, $1.4 million a season. And we've been talking about that deal, its implications going forward. And we're trying to figure out where this leaves Rasmus Sandin and the whole formulation of the Toronto Maple Leafs defense. When it comes to Sandin and where he fits right now, what do you make of that situation?
Well, I just think it's not entirely clear, right? And, you know, I don't believe it's clear on his end, and you know, it's something the Leafs will have to work through as they, you know, they have to sign him to a contract. I think the Liljegren deal is pretty risk free. That's a good team friendly number, I would suggest, for a player who still, you know, has shown you a fair bit last season at the NHL level. I think he had pretty good season from where
good
he started.
Good progression.
Exactly. To where he ended up, but we still, you know, I don't think anyone can say with total confidence what he's going to be as an NHL player. Can he ever move into a top four role? I mean, those things are still going to be determined by where his progression goes from here. So I think by getting him signed at that cap hit, it's a good thing. You know, the trick with Sandin is he's played more in the league. He's been more productive, even though this year was another tough one for him with the injury that ended the season early. And so, you know, I don't see him signing for that same amount of money. And you know, there's also the fact that there's three established left-hand shots that play ahead of him on the left side on the Leafs defense that are signed too. And so his future is maybe moving to the right side, or is there a trade in the offing? I think that still all has to be, you know, cleared up here before training camp.
Well, the Sandin situation is a tricky one because, you know, obviously he's a really highly touted prospect. He showed great signs of, you know, being an offensive puck moving defenseman, but the Maple Leafs have a luxury of having good numbers now on the back end. You know, you got Liljegren signed. Hopefully they can find a way to bring back Lyubushkin because he was a nice add to this group, based on what, you know, what he brought in his game. So if you have everybody healthy with those guys back, that's eight defensemen. Somebody's got to become expendable. Is that guy Jake Muzzin?
Well, Jake Muzzin has a no trade clause too, so
Is it limited no trade clause, isn't it? Or is it full?
I'm pretty sure it's full and then becomes limited in the future. So, you know, I haven't heard it anything but him being traded, so I'm going to have to assume it's a not. Look, it's a lot of numbers and you know, I still think you have to kind of decide how many sort of puck moving defensemen you want in that mix. You know, that's another part of it. And age factors in here. I mean, Sandin's still pretty young, as is Timothy Liljegren. You know, I think there's a risk in moving either of them potentially because, you know, could be a move you regret within 2 or 3 years, whereas, you know, some of the other guys are older in that sort of grouping of D-men. You know, I think Justin Hall's name's been out there a little bit as a potential, you know, player the Leafs might look to trade. And so, you know, it's going to be an interesting offseason. I don't think, you know, we're started talking about decisions down the lineup a little bit. I think that's where, other than the goaltending, most of the change is going to come from for the Leafs this summer. But, you know, I don't know where they're leaning yet. I know they've had some discussions with Sandin's camp about getting them signed to a new deal. I think they're going to have more here in the week or so leading up to the draft in Montreal. But, you know, ultimately, I think it's not just a matter of signing him. That will get done. That'll take care of itself in time. Where does everyone fit and does everyone stay?
You know, it's very interesting when you look at the Colorado Avalanche and them now being crowned the Stanley Cup champion. And the question that was asked to Gabriel Landeskog post game, I don't remember how it was phrased, but it was around the line of, you know, how did you guys get here? Like, what does it take to have this much success? And he basically said, find the next Cale Makar.
Yeah.
And no kidding. Look, you're not going to find the next Cale Makar because clearly this guy is a generational talent on defense. But I think what he meant by that is you need a star-studded defenseman on your team to even, you know, to think about having the success that they've envisioned in the playoffs. And if you're going to draft and develop these guys and then trade them away in their mid-20s, how are you accomplishing anything if you're the Maple Leafs by doing that?
Well, they got to try to find the next Cale Makar. Right. If it's not a Makar, it's find
a stud defenseman. Top pairing stud defenseman, which is something, I mean, and then I just go back to the draft 2 years ago when they drafted Rodion Hamaroff and Caden Gooley, and both Braden Schneider were sitting there. Now, look, I'm not saying those guys are the next Cale Makar, but those are two really good young defensemen that have the potential to be top pairing, top four guys in any organization that they're with.
Right. I view it not so much as a specific guy they need to find, though. I think it's more, you know, Tampa found Kucherov in the second round and Point in the third round, Cirelli in the third round. Like, I think it's more about they've got to hit on, they've got to find some real players at a spot where it's not obvious. And it's the hilarious thing about Makar, if you look back at that draft, is Colorado finished last in the league by a mile that season. Lost the draft lottery three separate times, essentially. They lost the first pick, the second pick, the third pick, and they still get the best player in the draft at four. I mean, what is life but randomness, and like how could you even script that? You know, but I think that's something the Leafs have to hope to do is develop some internal players or find guys in lower rounds of the draft that become, you know, impact guys around the core of this team. And preferably, yes, you want it to be, you know, a right shot defenseman who plays on your number one pairing and puts up the kind of points Makar is. But even if it isn't that, even if they just find some more players down the lineup, I think that can tilt the difference between a 5-year window of trying to run for the cup to a 10-year window.
Our guest is Chris Johnston, TSN Hockey Insider, and Larry Brooks of the New York Post, Chris, wrote in his column this week that the New Jersey Devils may be in on Jack Campbell and could look to acquire his rights prior to free agency. That's an interesting wrinkle. How extensive do you believe the list of teams are that have interest in Jack Campbell?
Well, there's going to be a few because, you know, there's a few teams that need, I don't know if we call Jack a number one, but they need a guy who can start 40 to 50 games. You know, look at Edmonton, you know, obviously Toronto's on that list, and there's still maybe a world where the Leafs bring back Campbell, although, you know, of course we get this close to July 13th and he's not signed. It starts to look less and less likely. You know, Detroit is a team looking for goaltending. He's, you know, is a Michigan guy. I think that there will be a couple teams, and we'll basically could throw the same teams out for all the, you know, whether we're talking about what happens with Darcy Kemper, who's hitting the market, Billy Husso from, you know, played in St. Louis last year. You know, there's going to be a few players that'll get bid on by those teams, and you know, certainly if it gets a little later here and the Leafs are willing to move his rights, that could be at least a nice way to get another pick, another dart to throw the dartboard in the draft. Although, you know, it tends to be, you know, low round picks when you're trading a pending free agent's rights. But I think Campbell will have his options, and I think someone will pay him $5 million or above, which is, you know, the main sticking point with his future in Toronto. I don't see the Leafs giving him that kind of number. I don't think they can really with their cap situation the way it is. And so, you know, right now the way it's pointing is that Jack Campbell is going to be playing somewhere else next year, whether it's New Jersey or elsewhere.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, look, the only way they could probably make it happen is if they find a way to get rid of Mrazek, but that seems to be a tall task in itself. You look at the goalie market, I mean, Darcy Kemper just won a Stanley Cup with the Colorado Avalanche. Is he a top priority for the Avalanche? And if he hits the market, what type of contract is he looking at getting?
That's a funny one because, you know, obviously he did win the Cup. You know, he was injured a couple times in the playoffs, so he didn't go the whole way. And, you know, a lot of people came away from watching those biggest games in the Cup final feeling a little less secure about him. I mean, you know, one agent said to me it's like Trent Dilfer, you know, back in the day. I don't know if it's quite that harsh. But,
wow, that is harsh. You know, wow.
But, you know, I will say this. It's the sort of one where the guy bolstered his credentials, but, you know, I think planted some seeds of doubt along the way. And, you know, Colorado's a great, great team. They scored more than anybody else in these playoffs. they shut it down pretty good there. In the game six, they only allowed four shots against Kemper in the third period with a one-goal lead.
He made a hell of a game-saving save, though, on Kucherov, though.
He did. And look, I'm not here. I'm not saying the guy can't play or anything like that, but I'm not sure that he's viewed as – he's not going to have the same vibe as a lot of guys coming off a cup win, I don't think, on the open market. But still, look, I think he's getting paid $4.5 million this year. You know, that's probably the market for him, $4.5 million, $5 million, $6 million, somewhere in that range. And, you know, Edmonton looked at him last summer when he was getting traded out of Arizona. You know, believe they put a package on the table to the Coyotes to try to get him. Maybe they revisit that this summer. I mean, he's going to end up with a decent deal, but I don't feel it's not. I don't think he's going to have 10 teams banging down his door just because of the way the position went and the way his season went. He's also getting up there in age too, right? So there might be some concerns about the length of the deal that you have to give him to bring him in as a free agent.
Goalie market, very intriguing. Johnny Gaudreau, the Pittsburgh Penguins, Claude Giroux, so much intrigue around the NHL as far as pending UFA goes. You'll be all over it. And the NHL draft next week too.
Didn't we tell CJ last week that when he came on the show this week, he had to break something for us?
It's true. You let us down, Chris. It's not over yet. You still might. You have 10 seconds to go.
I need tape on that one. I have no memory of that.
Chris, thanks for doing this, buddy.
All right, guys. Be well.
That's Chris Johnson.